You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, BC. This radio is diverse, independent, and always yours. Check us out at cjsf.ca or search CJSF 90.1 FM on SoundCloud.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Years before the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a letter to King with an unexpected outcome. The two men met in 1966 and became not only allies in the peace movement, but friends as they set aside their differences in religion, culture, and the fact that their countries were at war with one another. The two men bonded over a shared vision of what the late Congressman John Lewis called the beloved community. King was assassinated on April 4, 1968, and Thich Nhat Hanh went on to live for more than five decades, in which he continued to work on behalf of the beloved community that consisted of the teachings of overflowing love and compassion. The vibrancy and inspiration of their friendship is alive today and has practical implications as we strive together to embrace a life more deeply connected with the capacity for transformation in this imperiled world. To guide us is our guest today, the Right Reverend Dr. Mark Andrus. Bishop Mark Andrus is the 8th Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California, elected in 2006. Raised among the hills and lakes of East Tennessee, Bishop Mark developed an early love for the beauty of the earth and a call to protect it. His activism, grounded in contemplative prayer, has focused on key issues related to peace and justice, including immigration reform, civil rights for LGBTQ plus persons, healthcare, and climate change. Mark has led the Episcopal delegation to the annual UN Climate Conference. In service for presiding Bishop Michael Bruce Curry, Bishop Mark serves as representative to the Anglican Communion Environmental Network. He's the co-author with Reverend Dr. Matthew Fox of the book Stations of the Cosmic Christ and the author of Brothers in the Beloved Community, The Friendship of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. Join us for the next hours, we explore the significance of the friendship between Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. and how it continues to serve as inspiration for us in these most challenging times with our guest, the Right Reverend Dr. Mark Andrus. I'm speaking with Bishop Mark in his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Bishop Mark, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so honored and delighted to be with you, Justine.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's my honor as well. This is such an extraordinary piece of work that you've put together with all the research that you've done for us and framing it in such a beautiful way between these two men and how they really impact us today. So I want to go back into a bit of your history. Tell our listeners how you first became aware of Thich Nhat Hanh first, and then we'll talk about Dr. Martin Luther King. But first, Thich Nhat Hanh.
I was a young Episcopal priest. I was ordained in 1987. And after I served as a curate at a church in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, I came back. My wife and children and I came back to Virginia, where I had gone to seminary. And across the fence from Virginia Seminary is Episcopal High School, a boarding school. And I became the chaplain there. And I went to a bookstore in Alexandria, Virginia, and I saw a book with the title Peace is Every Step by an author unknown to me, Thich Nhat Hanh. This was in 1990 and 1991. And I bought it and I carried it around campus with me, and it caught everyone's attention. The Latina women who were working in the kitchen and the dining room, the refectory, they wanted to know about it. The faculty that I worked with.
They were seeing the title of the book?
They were seeing the title. They said, tell me about that. That just the title caught their attention. The students, same thing. I want to know about peace in every step. And so I was witnessing the power of simply that title. And I found the book luminous and lucid and in its simplicity, really profound. So I went to hear him. Thich Nhat Hanh spoke at National Cathedral that next year. And I went on my own. I took Metro into the city, and it was an extraordinary experience. He was by himself. He was introduced, and then he took his seat on a cushion in front of a completely packed cathedral. And, it's a big space, 3,000 to 5,000 people. And we were completely silent. And he spoke. It was a pregnant silence. He spoke uninterruptedly, quietly, but connectedly and compellingly for close to an hour and a half or more. And I was captivated. And then he came back the next year and spoke again in D.C., but this time at Washington Hebrew Congregation, which is a very large synagogue. Again, the space is about the same size as National Cathedral. And again, completely packed. And so I was hooked. I read more of his books, not all of his books. He's the author of over 100 titles, but I kept following him. And I practiced mindfulness, following his instructions. I became a person who followed Plum Village, his community in France, in the south of France. Right. So that's how I came to know Thich Nhat Hanh.
I would think, Bishop Mark, that he's sitting up there on the cushion, and he was not a large man. He was small in stature and not in spirit, but in stature. That would be very different if you're in that cathedral or even in the synagogue, that he's not standing at some podium, kind of expounding.
Right.
So when you, just the visual that you were giving us of him, just this monk in their very simple, simple robes, sitting on a cushion.
It's a whole different posture, isn't it? It's as you say, embodying humility, simplicity, mutuality. He's one with you, not above you. That's a great observation.
I know that later on you became the auxiliary bishop of Alabama and you moved to Birmingham. So I know that you were there. In the book, Brothers in the Beloved Community, you start off with that letter that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote to Martin Luther King about something for many of us. For many of us, remember seeing the photograph of Thich Nhat Hanh, who had immolated himself, who had burned himself up in protests, or in the letter says more than it was a loving gesture. Mm-hmm. It was hard to recognize that as a loving gesture. Yes. So let's talk about that letter that was written to Martin Luther King and why Thich Nhat Hanh might have chosen King as a recipient of that letter.
Mm. That's a very insightful question. So the letter was an appeal to Dr. King from Thich Nhat Hanh, based on Thich Nhat Hanh seeing the power of leadership that Martin Luther King Jr. was exercising within the civil rights movement, his ability to mobilize hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people for a cause of civil rights in the United States. And he is saying to him, this is your cause too, that this being peace between the United States and Vietnam, this has to be your cause as well. And I'm calling you to join me in this work for peace. And he's making the point that it is not different work than the rooted work of civil rights in the South, in the United States. And of course, King agrees with this. He already agrees with this. He had not come out about the war explicitly as he did with his Beyond Vietnam speech in 1967 at Riverside, his sermon at Riverside Church in New York. But he was on his path already. And so it is, interestingly, it's a both and. Both these men became what Thich Nhat Hanh would call world citizens, what Martin Luther King Jr. would say means living in the world house. So they were no longer confined to their loyalties to their religion, their country, their race, and they didn't abandon their loyalties to those things. So so King, it really confounded a lot of people by having his deep commitment to Black America and poor America and America in terms of becoming a just exponent of the beloved community, and he became a world citizen. This was very hard for some people to accept.
Exactly. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus, and by the way, he spells Mark M-A-R-C, Mark Andrus, A-N-D-R-U-S. So please look him up in that way. And his recent book is Brothers in the Beloved Community, The Friendship of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. And it's quite... You take us on quite a ride with this book and all the research and all the connections that you have with it. So I wanted to remind ourselves that I'm here with Bishop Mark, and I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus, author of Brothers in the Beloved Community, The Friendship of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. I just want to say, in that letter also that Thich Nhat Hanh sent to Martin Luther King, it was putting another view on what the burning up of someone sitting there and burning themselves up. Here in the West, we would say, oh, these people were committing suicide for this cause. But it wasn't that. Thich Nhat Hanh was helping us to understand the larger point of this. And it kind of, in some ways, odd way, it comes into nonviolence in some very, very odd way. Can you describe that and help us understand?
What Thich Nhat Hanh wrote, and this was, you, as you describe it, Justine, exactly how it hit the consciousness of the West and of the world, was a shocking example of suicide. And so we reject that in Christianity, actually Buddhism as well, overall. There's a heavy opprobrium on suicide in the world. It's a tragedy. It's loss. And what he said, what Thich Nhat Hanh said, is this was not suicide. This was really, if you could say, the opposite of suicide. This was an act of compassion and courage. And he gives the example that monks, when they are ordained in strands of Buddhism, China, Southeast Asia, that there's a ritual burning. Small spots on the skin are the monk grasps a hot object, and small circles are burned on the skin. Painful. But he makes the point that this is just the totality of that. So it's loyalty to your cause that you take to the ultimate. This is still hard. One of my dissertation committee members, a deeply faithful and tremendously compassionate and scholarly Western person, still doesn't get this. He doesn't buy this. In all of my research, this is the part he doesn't buy. Why does King buy it? Why does King accept this? And they put out a joint statement together, Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr., after this letter. And in that statement, King and Nhat Hanh recognize the immolations, the self-immolations of these monks and nuns as they called it, martyrs, that these people were martyrs. So how is it that he's able to see this? I think that what has happened is that Martin Luther King has taken so many faithful steps in his own journey by that point that he knows that the next step might be like lighting the match for his own self-immolation. In other words, much as I see Jesus, I do not believe that God willed Jesus to die. That's old. That's common theology. The Father, the God, the Father demanded the death of the Son as a sacrifice of a perfect being for the world. No, I think that Jesus, not supernaturally, yes, Son of God, but in a very human way, he saw that every time he took a step in faithfulness to the compassion of his life, he put himself more and more in the crosshairs of the Roman Empire. So the next step would be like lighting the match for your own death. And so we know that when Martin Luther King arrived at April the 3rd, the day before his assassination, 1968, and he preached at Mason Church in Memphis, he's talking about martyrdom, and he's explicit about it. Well, he's referring to it because he says, I have been to the mountaintop. And that's a reference, of course, to Moses, who is a great prophet and who dies before he can reach the promised land. And what he's saying is, that's myself. I recognize that I have taken the steps that will lead to my death. So he's able, from that place that most of us have not been, right? I have not been to that place. I have tried to be a faithful person in the causes of justice, but I have not been to that place. But he was inhabiting a place where he was so on the path of the martyr that he could recognize martyrdom. He could recognize the truth of what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying about these monks and nuns.
But Bishop Mark, the root word of martyr is actually, I think, witness. I think witness. You bring this up in your work. So let's talk about if one is being martyred to it, there's also that aspect of it.
Completely true. Thank you for bringing that up. So Thich Nhat Hanh himself was not martyred in the terms of what we call blood martyrdom in Christianity. But he lived a life of utter witness. And as one New Testament scholar has said again about Jesus, you can't believe in the resurrection of a person whose life doesn't support the idea of resurrection. In other words, an untruthful person, a violent person, and then suddenly we claim that this person has been resurrected. I'm not going to buy it. But a person who has been a witness with their whole life, faithfully, beautifully, then even though it strains credulity, I might believe it. And so Thich Nhat Hanh is a martyr in the sense of witness. And it's completely faithful witness, right? All the way to age 95, he stays on this path. When I went to meet him in Vietnam in the summer of 2019, of course, he could not speak or walk or write by that time because of his stroke in 2014. The nuns who lived next door to the monastery where he was, one of the young nuns, she was probably no older than 17 or 18, said to me, "I am grateful to be living in a revolution that Thay," the term they used for Thich Nhat Hanh, "is conducting without words." So I am grateful to live in a revolution that Thay is conducting without words. And what she meant by that was his commitment to gender equality. He had begun ordaining women to as Buddhist nuns, ordaining them in the 1950s and the early 1960s before he's exiled.
And that was unheard of in Buddhism.
Unheard of. Unheard of.
It was, yeah.
Very rare. And he returns to a Vietnam where it's still exceptional, and he resumes that work as a deeply disabled person from his strokes, but he's still committed. So the witness is so clear in his life. He just stays true to this vision of the beloved community.
He also was known for the what we term now engaged Buddhism, that he was encouraging the monastic monks to get out in and serve directly in that beloved community that we're talking about.
Revolutionary, as you say, Justine. So engaged Buddhism, he wasn't the only person to begin that, but he was a pioneer and perhaps the main leader in that movement to break open the walls that had been self-erected around monasticism, mostly male monasticism in Southeast Asia, Buddhism. So, this is indeed revolutionary because it's spiritual as well. What he's saying is that nirvana, the ultimate release and the realm of beatitude in Buddhism, is not some realm beyond this life. It is deeply in this life. And you can find, you can experience nirvana at any moment in your life. And this is totally in accord with the Buddha's teaching, but he's recovering the truth of the Buddha's teaching. Just as with Christianity, we had created exclusive enclaves of special Christians who were apart from other Christians, monks, nuns, ordained people, and they had access to a holiness of life that the ordinary Christian didn't have. Same with Buddhism. And Thich Nhat Hanh is completely turning that over and saying, no, it's holiness is shot through every aspect of the material world, and you find it by acts of compassion in that world, not apart from that world. Yes.
That reminds me, I'm thinking also going to the beloved community and talking about, like specifically, I believe Thich Nhat Hanh said this, and I know the Dalai Lama has said this. He said, both of them have said, that leadership is not going to be resurrected and then coming back. And like the Dalai Lama said, I'm the last Dalai Lama. It's something else will take its place. And this, Bishop Mark, takes us back to the beloved community as this. It's like a collective that will be leading us and leading us in a very different configuration than the hierarchy, you know, of patriarchy. Any thoughts on that?
Yes. So specifically, there is a belief in Buddhism, in Mahayana Buddhism, which you referenced earlier, in a future Buddha. And that Buddha is Maitreya Buddha. And what Thich Nhat Hanh said was, I believe that Maitreya Buddha will not come as an individual, but as the Sangha, the body of all faithful Buddhists. That will be the next Buddha. And coupled with that, he said, I am not selecting a person to succeed me, a person in his community. So he has communities that followed his teachings all over the world, the main one, of course, being in France. But unlike great Buddhist teachers previous to him, he is specifically not saying that there will not be a person succeeding him, but rather that responsibility and the privilege of holding that Dharma, that teaching, that body of teaching, will be all of the peoples. And so you combine these two ideas, Maitreya Buddha as all the Sangha, and you can see that he's giving the beloved community to all of us.
Exactly, exactly. I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus, and he is the author of Brothers in the Beloved Community, The Friendship of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions.